You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, welcome to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful night, and thank you so much for tuning in and supporting all that we're doing here on the podcast. It's been amazing. You guys have been amazing out there checking us out and subscribing and downloading, and it's just a real pleasure. Of course, I'm your host, Brent Thomas. This is the Paranormal Portal podcast.
And hey, all, it's Don with Paranormal Portal. Just want to give you a little background on the episode tonight. Tonight, our episode's going to start with a phone call from Mr. Wes Germer of Sasquatch Chronicles. And he's going to tell us about a phone call he got about some folks that wanted to discuss an incident that happened with them. And then we're going to move to Jess. Jess is our friend from YouTube. She calls in and she wants to talk about the moon. She's going to reference a picture that we're going to go ahead and put onto our Facebook page. That's going to be at www.facebook.com/paranormalportalradio. And if you'd like, you can go there and check out that picture and maybe follow along with the podcast and understand what she's talking about. Otherwise, it's a great picture. It is very descriptive, and I'm sure you'll get the picture as we go along. So here we go. Let's go ahead and jump into this episode, and I hope you enjoy it.
We do have a call.
Oh.
So let's get to this call and see what's going on. And this is Anonymous. Welcome to the show.
What's happening, boys?
Hey.
This is Wes. How's it going, man?
Oh, great, brother. How you doing?
Oh, doing pretty good. But I thought I'd call in. I got a cool story for you guys. I'm going to air it tomorrow, and I was curious if Brent or Don, you guys have heard such a thing. This guy calls me and he's in Kentucky. He's heading down these back roads. He's with his wife and he's with his daughter. And he said it was right as it was getting dark. I mean, it was basically dark at that point. Mm-hmm. The sun was just going down. And as they're heading down this road, this orange flying thing, and he said it was only about 5 or 6 inches big, flies right in front of his truck. And it's, And I'll describe it in a second, but it was glowing orange and it stopped in front of his truck and it was fluttering its wings and keeping pace with the truck. And then he said it put its wings to the body and it shot straight in the air and took off.
Wow.
And I talked to the wife, I talked to the daughter, and basically, you could hear her in the background. She's like, don't forget to tell him it was glowing. It wasn't just orange. It was glowing. And his daughter's like, yeah, it was glowing.
Oh, man.
And they've been driving down the road to see it again. But it kind of sounds like what you would think of like a Disney fairy.
Yeah.
That's kind of what he's describing.
Wow.
And I'd never heard of such a thing. And he said it was glowing orange and it fluttered right in front of the truck and then put its wings down and shot straight up and took off. And have you guys ever heard of such a thing?
You know, I don't think I've heard of a story like that. Of course, we've heard fairy stories. I don't know that many of them describe them as glowing, though. So that's what's interesting about this one. Did you get an idea of the size of it, or did I miss that?
I think you missed it. I think you said 6 inches.
6 inches? Okay. Yeah, I mean, that would certainly
fit. 5 to 6 big, yeah.
Yeah, that would certainly fit what most people describe the fairies to be as far as their size. You know, people do say that they shimmer. And I guess that could be interpreted as glowing as well. Yeah. But wow, that's really intense.
Yeah, they're heading down the road. They've been driving that same road every night to see if they could see it again. But one thing that's interesting is he said when it took off and they kept going straight, they were coming up to a dead end. And he said the whole atmosphere changed. He felt like they were in danger. Ooh. Something terrible was around. He said, I couldn't put my finger on it. But they did a U-ey and left. But I was just curious if you guys have ever heard of such a thing. A lot of times when you look up fairy lore, it sounds like aliens. It really doesn't sound like fairies. Well, they fly around in flying machines that kidnap people.
Right.
That's what the ancient writings say.
Well, you also did a story where a guy saw a little creature and it ran and jumped into this barrel thing and then shot up into the sky, right? Do you recall that one?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
That sounds like that to me, too. And, you know, I guess it's possible. That is just wild, though, to think that they're out there and they might be from way out there.
You know. Well, you know, and then Jim Mount also talks about, you know, that the flying orbs – with the living plasma around it, they're not very big. I think he said they're less than a foot, and they have the different colors. They have the orange, the red, the blue, the green. Remember?
Oh yeah, I thought you said they're like 4 feet in diameter, though.
Oh, maybe that was maybe that was correct. But anyhow, maybe something like that. Who knows?
Crazy. That is wild.
Who are you referring to? Are you talking about Don?
Oh, we have a friend. His name is Jim Mount. And he's been on the show. It's in the archive on YouTube. And he talked about the different alien orbs and how they have living plasma as kind of a screen, a shield. And this plasma will pretty much go through anything organic. They have different colors for the different states of
activity.
Like blue is everything's cool. Everything's good. Red is like hunter killer mode. Orange is, I don't remember. But he goes through like five or six different colors. And he talks about these, orbs, being of extraterrestrial, origin. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't have an answer for him. I'd never heard of such a thing before, but, it really wasn't. And I asked him too, I said, was it like a ball of light? He said, no, it had like a form, almost like a person, but it had wings. And it was really small. And, you know, obviously he's seen hummingbirds before. He was like, it was no bird. Right. This thing was not a bird.
Wow.
And I was going down the list of things it could be. He was like, no way, no way, no way. And he's like, it glowed red. It glowed orange. It lit up in an orange color and it was glowing. And so I don't know. I really don't know.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. And Mr. Germer couldn't hold on, but he had things he had to do. But thanks so much for calling in and sharing that story, brother. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
That is wild. I don't know. You know, I believe those things are out there. I believe there's all kinds of things out there. And it's hard to wrap your head around a lot of it just because it flies in the face of so much of our Western sensibilities, I guess. Right, Don?
Yes.
Do you have Western sensibilities, Don?
No, but I have no sensibilities. But, you know, and you're right. You know, it just flies in the face of everything we know, we've been taught, you know. Absolutely. It's always a sideways thing. So.
Right. But very cool. Good to hear from you. It's just another amazing piece of punctuation on a really amazing day. We've been busy and doing a lot of different things, but it's always great not only to have been on the Bigfoot Odyssey, but now to have heard from Wes as well.
Yeah, it's been a great day.
You know, it's just like, wow. All right, so we got another phone call coming in, and this looks like it might be Jess, but hello, 480, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. This is Jess.
Hi, how you doing, Jess?
I wanted to wish you the happiest 50th anniversary of the Apollo moon landing.
Right.
Ooh. Yep. Or is it?
Or was it?
Or did it? Did it land? No, I'm just kidding. I believe it did.
I think they did, and they found some
company
on the moon
yeah.
Yeah.
that they couldn't talk about it until way past retirement.
Right.
Right. Well, you know, again, our friend Jim Mount, who Don was referring to earlier, actually sent in a picture, apparently hand-given to him by Edgar Mitchell, that shows a photograph of Neil Armstrong standing in front, on the surface of the moon, standing in front of an ancient structure.
Yeah.
I think I still have that somewhere, too. I can pull it up and put it
on. I did.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I did see a picture of an astronaut looking at a humanoid corpse.
Oh,
it looked like it was
That was the Apollo
dug up, and it was on the moon. And then there was footage of astronauts walking around this like rough version of a condo. You know, that was on the moon. You know, they didn't build it. It was somebody else,
right?
Or some other,
right?
And then there was another mission that was confronted with on the dark side of the moon, aliens.
Yeah, they were being watched.
Spaceships.
Yep.
That's the stories. Yep. It's hard to know what's going on out there, but apparently there's a lot going on out there.
That is a lot, but it's fascinating and interesting. But I think they were on the moon. There were several missions.
Oh sure, yeah, I do too. I don't doubt that. I know there's some people that want, you know, like to throw a conspiracy theory at that, but I'm not one of them. I think that we went there. I don't know what we found. I've heard a lot of the reports, but apparently there's a lot more going on up there than we thought, though.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but I thought it was fascinating, and I thought I'd call in during the anniversary of the Apollo 11.
Oh, for sure.
First man on the moon landing. And, I find all the space travel fascinating and all that.
Oh, right, absolutely. I'm just...
What are your thoughts on this, John?
Oh, my thoughts are we are definitely there. I think the problem is, you know, people talk about Stanley Kubrick doing a moon shoot in the basement of somewhere. And I think that may be true to a point. And I think it might
in your basement? No, I'm just joking.
Nobody comes out of my basement but me. Anyhow, because if they do, they're probably taking things with them, like, you know, meat from the freezer, which they probably shouldn't do. The still, you know, that kind of thing. Anyhow.
That's the cover story anyway.
that's the disinformation. But I think the Stanley Kubrick conspiracy, I think it may be true that there was something that happened like that. But I think it's because, just like you said, that – they couldn't show the footage that they really had. So they had to make up something to show America, because it was such a pivotal point in our history that they had to have some kind of footage. So they remade, you know, they made the soundstage and this, that, and the other. And they did a little, you know, 8-second, you know, 5-minute video, basically, of a supposed the moon landing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say supposed, because I believe we were there, but I believe that they couldn't use that footage for security reasons. So they basically contracted somebody else to do a shoot, basically. Now, I think
I'll tell you, they weren't just trying to impress MTV.
Well, that's true too. They were impressing the entire world, which was the point.
Exactly.
Now, Brent's about to put up that picture on YouTube. Up. Oh, it's up right now?
Yeah, we're down the three.
Oh, yeah, I see it.
I think that's Edgar Mitchell, actually.
Edgar Mitchell gave Jim this, but this is Neil Armstrong and his putter. Or his
putter, yes.
His driver or his putter.
That's right.
He's holding his putter, ladies and gentlemen, and this was hand-given to our friend Jim Mount by Edgar Mitchell down in Florida. He bumped into him at a conference and talked with him at length, and Edgar Mitchell gave him this photo. I do believe Jim is legit. I mean, I have no doubt that what he says happened. I've known Jim for years. But this is his golf club. Apparently he's got his golf club with him.
That's
and,
awesome.
This is the structure that they found. This was really a great honor to get this picture and to be able to show it on the show. And, once again, Jim, thank you for that. It's just an amazing piece.
That's an awesome picture.
Yeah, it really is. And if you zoom in, I mean, I looked at this for, you know, at least a half hour looking for any kind of holes or something in the way the light is hitting it. any pixelizations that would show that it was fabricated. And I can't find anything under any exposures to show that it's a hoax. But yeah, this is an amazing picture.
Yeah, it's great. That's awesome.
Also, there's another thing. I heard some recordings that they tried to cover up too. You know, astronauts saying.
Oh right. Yeah.
Yeah, they switched over to the medical line to talk about it, and that's the line that was not being. That's the private line. So yeah.
Yep. So yeah, there was a lot going on up there that we probably don't know about.
But this is an awesome picture.
It's a great picture.
It is. Yeah. It's one of the, if it is a hoax, it was one I can't see anything rudimentarily about it.
Who took the photo? Digger Dog asked who took the photo.
It's Armstrong in the picture, but Mitchell took the photo.
Right.
So this is a photo.
Oh,
apparently.
Mitchell took the photo.
Yeah. So apparently this is a photo that Edgar Mitchell himself took. So
that is incredible.
Oh, okay.
It is. Yep. So you're seeing
now,
it
now,
here.
Now, what do you think about the moon itself? Do you think it's dead planet
The interesting thing about the moon is that it's actually allegedly millions of years older than the Earth. So it came apparently from somewhere else. The other interesting thing about the moon is that it defies the physics, astrophysics for a moon circling a planet, because normally they're much, much smaller in scale to the planet they circle. And this one,
I think it's like exactly a third of the mass. Is that right? Something like that.
And natural moons orbiting a planet are normally much, much smaller in comparison to the actual mass of the planet. So there's a lot of things wrong with our moon.
Yeah. You know, it's
that's a millionaire-year-old mooning us.
Right.
Right. Well, apparently, it was mooning long before we were out there, apparently.
Well, you know.
Exactly.
You know, actually, the First Nations have stories. First Nations have stories of a sky without a moon.
Yeah. And they have stories of when the moon came.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and those are, a verbal tradition going back, a long, long, long time. So I'm not sure how long it's been.
There's another theory that a planet collided with Mars or something, and that it became our moon something.
Yeah, well, actually,
it was kind of a weird theory.
Yeah, that story is actually like originally the planet was called Tiamat, and it was hit supposedly by Nibiru. It was actually struck, and what happened was Nibiru took out a chunk. And it had to be when the Earth was still cooling or something like that. The idea is that Tiamat spun itself back into a sphere and became the Earth. And then it had an asteroid field that eventually somehow regathered and became the moon. So that's kind of the story.
Oh,
there's different ideas on that story, but that's pretty much the idea. But so Tiamat and Nibiru. And there's also a theory that that's what caused human life on the Earth.
Oh, wow.
Either that.
Yeah, there's all kinds of different stories there.
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of different ideas. The slave race, the Anunnaki, Planet X, blah, 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 mining for gold.
The Anunnaki and the
reptilians.
The reptilians. I mean, the list of ideas goes on and on and on and on. And I don't pretend to have any idea which one of them is right or if any of them are. But I just think they're all very interesting, and they all have a merit of their own. So I'm not, outright discounting any of them either. I just don't know, and I don't pretend to know. But really interesting stuff.
I'm just kicking around ideas myself.
Sure.
I think it's interesting, fascinating, though.
Absolutely. Cool.
Very cool. Well, thank you for calling, Jess. It's great to hear from you.
All right. Andy. All right.
All right. Thanks,
talk
Jess.
To you later.
But yeah, that photo, that blows me away, Don.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so awesome that it was given to us to use. And,
yeah.
So. You know, it's just amazing the things that we don't think about, And like I said, it was supposedly Stanley Kubrick did, a fake landing and some things. And that would show exactly why they did that kind of thing was to cover it up. Not necessarily cover it up, but not be able to tell the story. At the time, so
I wonder why though, why was it, why wouldn't they just be like, hey guys, check it out. We found this stuff up there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't understand that.
It's a strange thing. You know, we were really innocent. I would say we were still really innocent as a civilization at the time, even though it was only like, what, 60 years ago. But we were kind of innocent, and a lot of belief that there's only one God, shall I say, and there's no aliens. But, you know, we've talked about this before. People like Art Bell and these other radio hosts and folks brought this into the light, drug it, kicking and screaming into the light. And now we're at a spot where we can actually – we're actually getting this information. So I think it was just for the protection of civilization as we know it. But it's time to move beyond.
It is. It is. I see Paisley entered in there. She's in the chat room.
Yep. Paisley's there.
Fear, yeah. Brent. People do crazy things when they are afraid. You're absolutely right. They do. And I give you that. I don't disagree that people, it would create fear to know that. But, you know, at the same time, we do know things that have made us afraid, and we've been okay. We've managed to make it through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our civilizations are certainly not devoid of tragedy and horror.
Right.
But somehow we always make it through. But I think, you know, the idea that it's, you know, we need to somehow be protected and umbrellaed from all this.
Right.
Unless there's something really horrible going on that they're just not ready to let us know about.
And
then it's okay. Keep covering it up. I'm good.
you know, there, and we come back to some, uh-huh. as we come back to the idea that some people just aren't open to it.
Right.
And the fear thing, you know, it's like, there are a lot of people who just don't want to know, like you said, you know, anything. And then there are some people who want to say this is real, but that's not, and that's not really acceptable,
right?
You know, so you know, it's a matter of bringing things into the light, and you got to prove it. You got to show the hard evidence to a lot of people, you know. And I'm one of those people, you know. I'm one of those people. If you show me a piece of evidence that I can believe, I believe.
Sure,
you know. So interesting. Did you know moon dirt smells?
I didn't, because I haven't smelled any.
I haven't either. Yeah.
This is kind of cool. The Weird Desk US says, mm-hmm. private contractors told our joint chiefs of staff they didn't have a need to know or the clearance. And that's, you know, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I think he's on the same line of conversation as we are.
Right.
And I find that incredibly interesting that they're contractors and they could say, well, you don't need to know.
Right.
So, who were they contracting to exactly? And who does need to know? That's what I'm wondering about. But I think that gets into more of the whole behind the curtain.
Right. Well,
black projects kind of stuff.
Well, you know, and even back then we had private contractors that built the different things that went to the moon, of course. And, you know, knowledge is power. So if a private corporation can tell the U.S. government or the chiefs of staff, in this case, you know, that, well, we're not going to share it with you because, you know, you don't need to know because, you know, we're going to hold on to it maybe for our monetary gain.
Right.
Or for when we feel it's time to disclose this information. You know, there's a lot of speculation there. And, you know, no matter who it came from, it happened. And that's all that matters right now.
Right. But what do you think about the breakaway space program then? You know, that kind of plays hand in hand with what we're talking about, though.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, and I talked about it earlier. Oh, weirdly. So I was alluding to about how, you know, there are different types of spacecraft. There's atmospheric, which can come in and out of the Earth's atmosphere, Mars atmospheres, whatever. And then there are the big ones you talked about, like Independence Day and the giant motherships.
Sure.
You know, those have to be built in space because they can't break atmosphere. They're too big. They're too slow. And they're not really made for it, because once you get it up in space, you can make this giant disc and it only weighs like 5 pounds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was on the Earth, it'd be too big to move. And so where the hell was I going with this?
I don't know. I was wondering the same thing. It's like, how is that a breakaway space program?
Oh. So, but this is where I was going. So okay. Part of the idea,
welcome back.
Some of the idea is that's what this moonwalk and this space exploration was the precursor to, possibly something more. The idea that possibly there's something more than the ISS up there, as in maybe like, I don't know, a space vehicle building port, a space vehicle manufacturing that can't be manufactured on Earth because of gravity, atmosphere, things like that. You know, you can do a whole lot of things in zero G, and you can do them a whole lot easier with a whole lot less.
Sure.
And so maybe, you know, we were talking about, breakaway space. So you can build these things out in space, whether it be just outside of the atmosphere between here and the moon or past the moon on the dark side of the moon, the quote unquote dark side of the moon. Uh-huh. And nobody will ever notice. So a breakaway civilization or a breakaway, you know, or a secret space program, you know, very doable.
Mm-hmm.
Expensive, but very doable.
I'm looking this up because, this is mostly video links.
Yeah.
But it was weird desk says US, read the Admiral Wilson leaked document from Edgar Mitchell's archives, and I did pull up a link, but it's a lot of YouTube stuff. I'm just looking to see if there's a PDF Admiral Wilson notes. Let's see if I can find something that I can.
That you figured out
that's not
the
it. That's not it.
Get that off there.
Gosh. It's apparently I would have to look for it before a show and not during a show. So that's not going to work. But thank you for that reference. And we will definitely look into that for future discussions. But yeah, that's crazy. Lots of weirdness going on. So, you know, do you believe, Don, there is a breakaway space program?
You know what? And I just read this. It was Marcus Aurelius.
Okay.
He said the breakaway is from millions of years ago. Now, that's also something that hasn't been brought up, too. We've never really discussed – we don't really discuss, like, ancient civilizations, the rise and fall of human life or life on the planet. You know, and so – but we talk about ancient aliens. We talk about, you know, the Anunnaki. You know, we don't know how long ago they were here. We don't know – there's no – real record. There's just passed down information, passed down history, you know, and we can only extrapolate from that. But that is a good point. That is a good point that it may be from millions of years ago before the rise, I should say, of modern man, because we really don't know how old the Sphinx is. We know it's older than 25,000 years, though, because of the water wear on it. It makes absolutely no sense, that type of water wear. So, yeah, it may have been before the age of modern man. Absolutely. Wes said it's like element 51 isn't from here. Oh, I'm sorry. Element 51. Element 115 isn't from here. We can I think the idea is that we can synthesize it, but we can't actually make it, or we can mine it. That's another thing we don't ever talk about, is mining asteroids. You know, so there are just lots of ideas that all of these things happened before the age of modern man. And we only have, like I said, the passed down history. You put it in front of me, or you give me a fact that I can believe. I am all for the idea, you know, of finding out and having that disclosure and finding out, you know, what races are with us here. You know, the Chinese have said for 60 years that, yeah, they live in the open. But of course, we're not allowed into Red China, so you know it's a bit of a problem. You know,
just so I wonder, does that mean do they look like people, but they just regard them as aliens, or do they look like aliens just hanging out with people?
You know, that's an interesting thing. You know, there are supposedly a lot of races that are very, very human-like,
right.
Humanoid. Sure. So you know, maybe those are the ones that came in peace, like say, Valiant Thor. You know, and,
right.
And
okay.
Jane and Dawn, you know, they all came down and were talking with Eisenhower, and basically the government decided to go with the other option, which was being apparently offered by the Greys, for lack of a better term, because there really isn't one yet. But so there you have it. You know, there's all kinds of speculation and supposes and extrapolations, you know. So,
right. Now, what was interesting, though, wasn't Valiant Thor from Venus?
That's what
wasn't he Venusian?
Venusian. Yeah. Supposedly, as I understand it, through my research, he lived in the interior of Venus. So why can't there be an interior of the
Earth? Yeah. I think there is, Don.
I think there is. I agree. So does that bring up the question that maybe some of these aliens aren't necessarily extraterrestrial, but intraterrestrial?
That's the natural progression I'm seeing. Yeah. So there is that, ladies and gentlemen. So tonight we're talking about a lot of things, but we are currently just getting into the whole ancient civilizations and how long has things been around? What's going on here? You talk about things like Don, like Puma Punka. Mm-hmm. It was covered a lot on Ancient Aliens with Georgie Tsouklous. I know, he's like, it's like he's licking electrical sockets before he comes on. Okay, ready to go. I love that show, and I've watched tons of them. Mm-hmm. But I find the arguments really, really compelling. And it, just in terms of if there is evidence of people having been helped through the aeons by these otherworldly intelligences or advanced intelligence anyway. But we just kind of brushed on the idea that there's maybe people inside the world too. And maybe those people inside the world are way ahead of us as well.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe they were able to get a head start because they didn't have glaciers rolling over them, you know, and maybe that helped them get a little ahead of us.
That's actually
an interesting thought. You know, that they were protected from, dare I say, mud floods or, the melting of the glaciers that cut the valleys through Montana and Idaho and Washington and all over, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe that didn't affect them so much. You know, maybe they didn't have an issue with the 40 days and 40 night deluge. Who knows? But, you know, yeah, it's quite possible that we've been wiped out, like, you know, the crust walkers, the Eloi.
The crust walkers.
Have been wiped out, remade. But the Morlocks in the center of the Earth.
Isn't that what you call the guy at the end of the subway line? That's the crust walker. Sorry, it just came to me. I had to roll with it. I had to try.
Mind the gap.
What did you say about Eloi?
Eloi, the crust walkers.
Is that seriously a term? I've not heard this.
It's a reference to The Time Machine by George Orwell.
Oh,
the Eloi and the Morlock.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Anyway, continue.
But, you know, so we've been wiped out, you know, the crust of the earth peoples have been wiped out, but yet, you know, the hollow earth people have been, you know, building their civilization for million years, you know, who knows? So maybe that might be part of the breakaway civilization as well. Have you ever thought of that? Maybe they went underground to break away from society because they saw the warnings of what may be coming, or, you know, maybe they, you know, didn't agree with the people that walked the earth at the time. So there's another idea of breakaway civilization for you.
That's kind of an interesting one. So the glaciers descended from the north down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't there allegedly an entrance to inner Earth up on the North Pole area somewhere?
Mm-hmm. And somebody just mentioned Admiral Byrd. So
yes, that's Antarctica, though, right?
No, yeah. It's good. Well, no.
Wasn't it? Or did he go north? I don't remember. I thought he went down to Antarctica.
Somebody's laughing. Oh, the weird desk is laughing at me. Crestwalkers, that's funny.
He said it's a t-shirt.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. Thank you. I'll have to work on that. Or a bumper sticker. I'm a Crestwalker.
Well, yeah, that's we might awesome. As well try to market the hell out of it. You know, and ladies and gentlemen, the idea of now I've been thinking this for a long time, ever since I learned about the artifacts out of time and the idea that there are screws embedded in coal and things like that, and machined aluminum parts found next to mastodon skulls in different parts of the world. God, we've got some calls.
My.
Let's get to these and see what people are thinking out there. So the first one is from Anonymous.
Anonymous
is on the line.
Hey, guys. Sorry. Oh. I'm multitasking listening to the show. And this is Wes, by the way.
Yeah.
I meant to call in before the break. You guys should do a show on Val Thor.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great story.
It is, yeah.
I'm glad Don said that because there's a lot of weird things with that story when you dig into it. Mm-hmm. Like Val Thor a picture of him from like the late 40s and a picture of him from like the 60s, he has not aged one bit.
Right.
And there's weird things. Eisenhower started acting really weird around that time. He started making a lot of weird decisions. And so there's a lot, you know, it might all be a BS, but there's a lot of weird things around that story. But I was going to call in and tell you guys, when I interviewed Travis Walton, the fire in the sky,
right?
When the ship docked with the bigger ship and he got out and he was trying to, he didn't know where he was at. He was trying to run. He ran into what he describes as a human being. He said the guy, really good looking guy. The guy really didn't kind of looked at him with an empathetic type look. But I said, if this guy was walking down New York, would anyone think anything strange? Or walking down in L.A., would any? He goes, no, he looked just like you or me. But he could tell, you know, he grabbed him by the arm and walked him back in to the smaller craft. But you guys should do a story on Valthor. Yeah, it's a really cool story, man.
We'll have to dig into that. And you know, the funny thing is, Wes, we've heard, I've heard in you know, in my years of checking into UFO and encounter stories and such, that there are a lot of people that encounter human looking people and like people in different stages of human and alien, like it's a hybrid program, you know, like where they're creating a hybrid species. And I wonder if that's what Travis ran into, was like a hybrid.
Yeah, I don't know. I asked him, and he said it looked very human. Wow. Everything about this thing looked very human-like. So, I, you know, just to say, I really don't know. I think the creating a hybrid thing is a story as old as time. Just like Don had mentioned, George Orwell. Well, that story actually has been around way longer before George showed up on the scenes. That's from ancient writings. George just gave it different names. Right. He gave him the Eloys and... You know, he kind of spun the story a little bit, but that actually comes from somewhere. Oh. He didn't just dream that up one day.
Well, you know,
but with all the weird things,
right?
You know, it's just go ahead, Don.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't mean to. I don't mean to interrupt you, sir. But the First Nations have a lot of stories of going back to the deluge. I believe it's the Hopi war. Helped by the ant people that took them underground and got them through a time of destruction. And so, you know, it's a good, it's not a far leap. It's a good thought, line of thought that says that these people that helped the Hopi are from the center of the earth, or, you know, hollow earth, whatever you want to call that. So yeah, it you're right. It does come before Orwell, but he sensationalized it because that's what he does, you know. But yeah, there's a lot of stories. As a matter of fact, there's another First Nations, and I'm not going to say anything about who it is because I can't remember, that tells a similar one of not ant people. Were they lizard people? I can't remember. But yeah, you're absolutely right, and I agree. Yeah, and you know, George Orwell did his thing, you know, and brought it to light. But people don't connect things like that; they just don't.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of those stories go back to even the giants.
Oh, yeah.
If you go outside of the Bible and you see in these ancient texts, the giants were having nightmares that a flood was coming, and everyone was going to be. They actually had this nightmare that kind of goes in the whole story of how Enoch gets involved with the Nephilim, but. Right. They started having visions of it. But if you read some of the ancient texts, if you buy into it, some of the supposedly fallen angels put their sons in the earth.
Right.
Before the flood came. Because the Bible says they were there before and after. It's not like, well, the flood took care of it. It really didn't take care of it because it says before and after. Right. And it's weird when you start hearing rumors of the military finding these giants like in deep underground caverns and they're in a state of stasis. Now, whether you buy that or not, it's kind of weird reading rumors of this now. And then when you start looking at the history, maybe it's not as crazy as it might sound.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it is, but it's kind of weird how different things, it's kind of like when they found Nimrod's body, the lady, it was the day before we went into Iraq, by the way. But the lady who dug him up said he looked like he had died yesterday. Wow. He wasn't decayed. He hadn't been there for thousands and thousands of years. It looked like he had died yesterday. Now, what's weird is there's a military base now on top of his tomb, U.S. military base.
Sure.
But that's a whole nother rabbit hole. There's a weird couple weird things with pictures. And, you know, I'm 50-50 sometimes on the Bible, but there's a verse in Revelation that talks about the Antichrist and don't go looking for him. You'll find him in the desert. And then it talks about him being surrounded by eagles. And there's a picture of the U.S. military all standing around Nimrod's tomb. And what's on their uniforms? Sure. Eagles.
Wow.
And it makes you wonder, you know, if Beth Midler can go through and recreate her dog three times over, you know, through DNA.
Oh, God, yeah.
Why couldn't we take some of that DNA and recreate Nimrod if we wanted to?
Right. Wow.
Sorry. I don't mean to go off
Bible
tangent.
No, that's cool. No. It all plays out perfectly.
Well, you know, and they're trying to bring back Woolly Mammoths. You know, what was the guy's name? Destination
Unknown?
Josh. Yeah.
Josh Gates.
Josh Gates. You know, he was over in like Siberia and they were digging up mammoth tusks and skulls and bones. And they believe they found viable mammoth DNA. So if they can clone a mammoth from frozen DNA, then why couldn't they? If they find the body of somebody, say the Giants or Nimrod, it's not far-fetched to think that they could basically reawaken him through DNA cloning. Wow. I mean, they've already cloned things. There's already cloned things in the world. It's not a possibility. It's a fact.
Yeah.
So,
well, it is. I think the process still has to come a long way before that. But, you know, it's definitely coming. Well, I mean, just as far as we know.
As far as we know.
As far as we know.
It's part of that disclosure
thing. God only knows what they can do and what they can, what they've already reanimated. God, when I see these cryptid tales, I'm pretty sure somebody's messing around in a lab somewhere. Because there's weird crap everywhere.
Yeah, I would agree.
We also had somebody call into the show one time and told us about how I think it was his father or grandfather, I may be mis saying this, but basically he said that big Sasquatches, are they big feet? I don't know. What's a group of big foot called?
Anyway.
Sasquatches come from inside the earth. And this is one theory that they had, is that they're not necessarily crust dwellers, but they do come up to the surface for whatever it may be. So there's been speculation that they are from the middle of the earth or, you know, hollow earth. So that's another thing that was mentioned briefly on a past episode. So
your thoughts, Mr. Germer?
Yeah, I don't know that I have much. I mean, I've had a, not a demonologist or I don't know how you guys get all your terms, a psychic. She wasn't a psychic, but she, thought she would go in and get rid of poltergeists.
Okay.
She's like a Ghostbuster, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And she had made that comment that, and she actually got rid of them, but she had the Sasquatches, I mean, and she had made the comment, same thing. They're coming in up out of the earth.
Right.
And so it makes you wonder the hell's going on. You know, the hollow earth theory, I know a lot of people kind of mock that. And I sat and I watched this whole video. I'll have to send you guys. It's pretty fascinating.
Sure.
The scientist explains why the earth is hollow, and he does it through earthquakes. And he was talking about, if I take a rock and I throw it in a pond, that wave's going to go all the way to, you know, almost endless.
Right.
The wave's going to keep going until it obviously at some point runs out. But you can throw a rock in a pond and have that wave go all the way across the pond.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about how earthquakes, that if there's an earthquake in California, they should feel it on the other side of the globe if it wasn't hollow.
Wow.
Because there's nowhere for that earthquake to go. It's that big pond. But he goes, because it's hollow, when there's an earthquake, that's why earthquakes are concentrated in one area. You know, California has a 6.9, yet up here in Washington, we don't feel it.
Right.
You know, we have no clue there was an earthquake.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't know if the whole hollow earth thing is true or not. I'm not a scientist, but it was very fascinating to watch him explain this hollow earth theory and why. And he does it through earthquakes and he does it through science and explains why it's hollow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought it was fascinating.
Yes. It is.
I don't know how I got off on that tangent.
No, but it's cool because we had a guest on the show, Brooks Agnew, and we did we just released that as a podcast just recently.
Yep.
But he talked about he's a big Hollow Earth person. He's a scientist as well as a entrepreneur, inventor, and et cetera, et cetera. But he was talking about how deep water seismographs have actually recorded waves hitting the shore on an underground ocean. So there's apparently entire oceans
underneath
the crust. And he was talking about gravitation and stuff. And he's like, at some point, as you go through the 700 miles of crust, you're going to hit a point of like zero gravity, because then when you get inside the crust, you'd actually be drawn towards the outer side of the crust.
The greater mass.
Right, the greater mass. So he was talking about how it's widely believed there's oceans in there. He talked about how there could be photosynthesis due to, I forget, what is it, iron?
The iron core. Yeah,
the iron core.
It shines like a sun.
Right, it shines the sun like a sun because of its you know, the temperature and what was going on. He explains the science so much better than I ever could. But, I mean, it's all possible. It's all feasible. That this is going on and something's under there. And he's talked about how like these manta rays or whatever came out and they were recording them when the sea ice receded suddenly in the Arctic. The sea ice receded and all of these mantas were coming from somewhere.
1,500 different species.
Yeah, 1,500 different species were just suddenly emerging. And they believe that that could be from the inner ocean. So very wild stuff.
It is wild stuff. One thing I'll leave you guys with is, what do you guys think of people wanting to storm Area 51? Personally, my government handlers, I'm not allowed to be involved in that, but I'm just joking. But what do you guys think about it? What do you guys think about that whole thing? And what do you think is going to happen?
I think I think that the military has a vast array of deterrents from different chemical sprays to acoustic weapons, all the way up to missiles and all kinds of ugliness. And anybody that decides that they're going to take a walk into a highly secure top secret base are probably looking to end up in a body bag. I think that's about the stupidest thing I've heard in a long time. I think what'll happen though is that it'll be a bunch of people having a festival outside of the gates, pooping all everywhere because there won't be any kind of sanitation and it'll just be a huge mess, and it'll probably become the next Woodstock.
The original Woodstock.
Yeah.
You know, the guy who set that up on Facebook actually came out after he said after 500,000 people, he looked up and he thought, you know what, I might want to say something because I don't want the alphabet soup knocking down my door. He says it was done as a joke. There was only originally like 40 people who even liked it. And then like a week later, it just blew up. And he said, I just wanted to say it's a joke, you know. But they interviewed people from Rachel, which is right next to Roswell in that area there, Area 51, such like that. And they don't have the infrastructure to hold a million people, much less 500,000. They just don't have the infrastructure. They'll crash. Yeah. You know, they'll run out of food. They'll run out of sanitation. You know, they won't have any water. The stores in the little tiny town are going to be sold out of everything. But what's the owner, I forget her name, the owner of the Little Alien said it would be great. She's been contacted by like four or five different bands and wants to put on a festival. So I think that's about as far as it's really going to go, because like Brent said, you know, all they have to do is fly a drone over you and that's pretty much you're done business.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well, I got to take off, fellas. I'm going to continue listening to the show, awesome. But I got to get back to work.
Yeah, absolutely, bud.
Thanks for calling in. It's great hearing from you.
So anyhow, I mentioned earlier that apparently moon dirt smells. And it says here, a big question facing the NASA team planning Apollo 11 moon landing was, what would the moon's surface be like? Would the lander's leg touch down on firm ground or sink into something soft? The surface turned out to be solid, but the real surprise was the moon had a smell. Moon soil is extremely clingy and hard to brush off. So when Armstrong and Aldrin returned to the lunar module and repressurized it, lunar dirt that had clung to the men's suits entered the cabin and began to emit an odor. The astronauts reported that it had a burned smell like wet fireplace ashes or like air after a fireworks show. Oh, that does speak to a big giant fire, doesn't it? Or maybe the super cooling of remains of the Earth after it was hit by Nibiru. Scientists would never get a chance to investigate just what the crew was smelling. While the moon soil and the rock samples were sent to the labs in sealed containers, once they were opened back on Earth, the smell was gone. Somehow, as Charles Fishman, author of One Giant Leap, says, the smell of the moon remained on the moon. Now, that's interesting. That is interesting. I didn't actually know that. Let's see here.
It's kind of like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, what happens on the moon stays on the moon. You know, and that's, you know what? That's a very applicable saying. What happens on the moon stays on the moon.
Apparently.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, everything we've talked about tonight about it. Another interesting fact, JFK was more focused on beating the Soviets than in space. Well, Nixon was also that way too. In public, President John F. Kennedy had boldly pledged that the United States would set sail on this new sea because there is new knowledge to be gained and the rights to be won, and they must be won and used for the progress of all people. But secret tapes of Kennedy's discussions were later revealed that in private, JFK was less interested in space exploration than one-upping the Soviets. In a 1962 meeting with his advisors and NASA administrators, JFK confessed, I'm not that interested in space, but he was interested in winning the Cold War. Just months after JFK's inauguration, the Soviet Union had sent the first man into space. Kennedy asked his vice president, Lyndon B. Johnson, how the U.S. could score a win against the Soviets. One of the best ways to show U.S. dominance, Johnson reported back, was by sending a manned mission to the moon. Johnson, in fact, had long been a space advocate. He stated, control of space is control of the world. That's ominous. Another interesting fact, the Soviets covered up their efforts to get to the moon first. It turns out that the United States wasn't alone in wanting to demonstrate its dominance by landing humans on the moon. The Soviet Union was also gunning to accomplish this feat. But once U.S. astronauts got there first, the Soviets tried to keep up their efforts on the down low. At first, secrecy was necessary so that no one could overtake us, wrote a Russian journalist in the Soviet newspaper called something Pravda. But later, when they did overtake us, we had to maintain secrecy so that no one knew that we had been overtaken. Oh, it's that what people don't know, don't know.
Well, yeah. Is that what people don't know?
Yeah, well.
That was clever.
Astronauts trained for microgravity by walking sideways. How do you prepare to send someone to a place no one has ever gone before? You send Kirk. For NASA in the 1960s, the answer was to create simulations that mimicked aspects of what astronauts could expect to encounter. Armstrong and Aldrin rehearsed collecting samples on fake indoor moonscapes. Armstrong practiced taking off and landing in the lunar lander training vehicle in Houston, and to simulate walking on the moon's lower gravity atmosphere, astronauts were suspended sideways by straps and then walked along a tiled wall. NASA and the U.S. Geological Survey even blasted out craters at Cinder Lake, Arizona, to create a landscape that matched part of the moon's surface because, after all, practice makes perfect. Now, and that's where we see a lot of pictures of, like, the three astronauts in their suit holding their helmets and a rover beside them. So people are like, yeah, the moon landing really happened because here they are, you know, being able to breathe the atmosphere without helmets on. Well, you know, it also goes back to what I said about Stanley Kubrick. You know, they had to train somewhere. Mm-hmm. So civil rights activists got a front row seat at the Apollo 11 launch. Not everyone was gung-ho about the U.S. effort to land people on the moon. A few days before the scheduled launch of Apollo 11, a group of activists led by the civil rights leader Ralph Abernathy arrived outside the gates of Kennedy Space Center. They brought with them two mules, a wooden wagon to illustrate the contrast between the gleaming white Saturn V rocket and families who couldn't afford food or a decent place to live. Amid the heady buildup to the launch, the NASA administrator, Thomas Paine, came out to talk to the protesters face-to-face. After Paine and Abernathy talked for a while under lightly falling rain, Paine said he hoped that Abernathy would hitch his wagon to our rocket using the space program as a spur to the nation to tackle problems boldly in other areas and using NASA's space success as a yardstick by which progress in those other areas should be measured. Wow. Paine then arranged to have the members of the group attend the next day's launch from the VIP area. Abernathy prayed for the safety of the astronauts and said he was proud as anyone at the accomplishment. That's an interesting idea, linking that together and using it as a yardstick to solve these things. Because if a rocket to the moon can prove one thing, it proves that we can do anything we need to, anything we can put our mind to. Mm-hmm. And taking care of the homeless, the people who are poor, you know, however you want to say that, you know, I don't know. Anyhow, right. But that is a great way to show that support. That's awesome.
Yes.
Buzz Aldrin took Holy Communion on the moon. I didn't know that. Hmm. When Apollo 11's Eagle Lunar Module landed on the moon on July 20th, 1969, astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin had to wait before venturing outside. Their mission ordered them to take a pause before the big event. So Aldrin used some of the time doing unexpected something no man had ever attempted before. Alone and overwhelmed by anticipation, he took part in the first Christian sacrament ever performed on the moon, a rite of Christian communion.
Huh.
Interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, no doubt. What day did they land?
I don't know. I have no idea. I
forgot. This day in space.
This day in history. Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's the 50th anniversary. Is that not today?
It's just the date is today.
Okay.
What day did the Titanic sink? No.
Look up this date in 1969. It was 1969, right? 7/20. All right. Let's
hold on. Hold on. I'm almost there.
Yeah, but you type slow.
I do type slow. It was July 16th and then July 24th. So those days. But what was the day is what I was asking. Was it a Sunday is my interest.
Was it a Sunday?
Was it a Sunday?
Sundays are fun days.
Sunday. I'm not going to find that very quickly. So I'm going to skip that one.
It was Sunday.
It was a Sunday.
July 20th, 1969 was a Sunday.
There you go.
I said, what day of the week was the first landing of the moon? It was a Sunday.
There you go.
I guess it was fitting to have a little church.
There you go. Scientists were worried about space germs infecting Earth, which is actually a good thing to worry about. After risking their lives for the advancement of humanity, Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins had the dubious pleasure of being stuck in planetary protection quarantine on their return.
Yeah.
Wow, that's an interesting thing.
I'll leave it for you.
Since humans had never been to the moon before, NASA scientists couldn't be sure that some deadly spaceborne plague hadn't hitched a ride on the astronauts. As soon as the reentry capsule splashed down in the Pacific Ocean on July 24th, the trio was transferred to a mobile quarantine facility inside which they were transported to NASA Lunar Receiving Laboratory at Johnson Space Center, where they had access to a larger quarantine facility until their release on August 10th. Holy crap, they were in there for like 2 weeks.
Wow.
All right, and then this last one here. President Nixon was anxious the mission could fail. While President Kennedy had rallied the nation to land on the moon, he was assassinated before he could see the Apollo mission achieve his vision. That nerve-wracking honor fell to President Richard Nixon, who had been elected in 1968. Watching Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin take the first steps on the moon, Nixon's anxiety reached a peak. If anything went wrong, he would have to manage America's outrage over billions of tax dollars accumulating and the death of two astronauts.
Huh.
At least two astronauts. His staff had prepared a statement to be read in the event the worst happened and organized a priest to commit their souls to the deep, much like a burial at sea. Watching Apollo 11 live from the moon, the president could only hope he wouldn't have to read it. He didn't. The men who had traveled more than 200,000 miles to the moon and then stepped foot on an alien world had survived, and the United States would go on to complete six crewed missions that landed a total of 12 astronauts on the moon from 1969 to 1972.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then they quit, Don.
And they just, we don't have the technology to go back to the moon.
We lost it.
I don't know. I cannot believe that. I mean, we have even the Voyager satellites, we launched them. They went until they got out of the solar system. Mm-hmm. How could we not? How could we have lost that kind of technology to just put somebody on the moon? I don't get it.
Wow.
I don't get it.
I don't know either.
I think they may just be holding on to those funds to possibly fund something else. Like maybe Space Force.
I love that name, Space Force. That is just totally like something you'd expect to come out of an elementary school.
Me and Jimmy are going to make Space Force, Ma. I've got 15 UFOs. I've got 15 spaceships to use.
Who wants to be
UFOs
on Space Force with me? Eh? Come on. Come on, guys.
You do that so much better than I do.
But, Don, anything in closing?
Thanks to Wes Germer for giving a call. It's always nice to talk to you, and he always brings interesting questions with him.
All right, everybody. We love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day, and remember to laugh as much as you can.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.